Welcome, Capital Raisers. We got Dan Breezy in the house today, who scaled absurdly fast to 2,500 multifamily units, and let me dive deep into how he did it. Are you guys ready to raise? Shout out to InvestNext, our portal of choice, and the Family Office Club, which is the largest association in the capital raising industry with over 3,000 ultra-wealthy investors globally. Get a massive $2,000 discount on memberships by messaging me or mention the Capital Raiser Show when you talk to familyoffices.com. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 297, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Dan Breezy on the Capital Raiser Show. What's up, brother?
How you doing? Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, I'm excited to talk to you, dude. So fellow snowboarder in the house, Granite Towers Equity in the house, really stoked to have you. Capital Raiser Show season 4, now powered by the Family Office Club. And shout out to our new sponsors, InvestNext. Really excited to have you, Dan. So, dude, I want to start with this, man, because I hear that you're like a gold medal X Games finalist or something like that. What happened there, dude? I love snowboarding, man.
Yeah. I grew up in central Minnesota with this crazy idea of trying to be a pro snowboarder. Like probably a lot of your listeners when they were young, I just thought it was going to happen and went around and told everybody how I was going to make this athlete coming out of Minnesota. And pretty much everybody was like, yeah, you might want to have a backup plan there, or maybe you should think about college. And it was a little bit discouraging, but my parents, being as amazing as they were, they told me to go for it. So packed up after high school, moved out west, lived in Salt Lake City for 4 years. I was snowboarding since I was maybe 11 or 12 years old in Minnesota every day. Get done with high school, I moved to Salt Lake City. Think I'll be a pro snowboarder that next year. Reality sets in. I've got a long ways to go. I'm working odd jobs, Blockbuster, Payway, Red Lobster, anything I can at night so I can snowboard all day. End up having some injuries, some setbacks. 4 years later, I'm still not a pro snowboarder. Ended up having a major knee injury and decided, hey, am I going to go all the way or am I going to be done here? And I was 100% committed. So came back from my knee injury the next year. My friend drove me to Aspen, Colorado. He paid for my entry fee, paid for the gas. I was pretty much a broke kid. Paid for me to get in the contest and I won. And that was the first contest I won at Colorado. Yeah.
First contest?
Yeah, it was pretty great and ended up having a 15-year run. But my high of my career was, yeah, 2 X Games gold medals, 2 silver medals, and yeah, number 3 rider in the world on Snowboarder Magazine. So it was a dream come true for sure. But reality was, is again, kind of things just keep setting in a place of, hey, what are you really going to do when you're done being a snowboarder? So yeah, it was a great career though. Nothing, no regrets.
Cool, man. I had your partner, Mike Roeder, on here. He was amazing. We had a lot of fun talking shop about how you guys scaled to 2,500 units, like blink of an eye. So we'll probably chat a little bit about that. But take us from this moment in history where you're done snowboarding, or at least you're no longer professionally competing. And then how did you get into real estate from there?
The realization that my snowboarding career was going to end and I was scared. And I didn't have enough money to live the next 10 years of my life, let alone retirements. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, what am I really going to do where I'm going to have this kind of freedom, this kind of income, and this kind of passion after I'm done being a snowboarder? I'm only 30 years old. So I started reading everything I could on money and trying to better understand what to do with money I was making. And I had a tax bill. This is something I never, ever would have thought. But growing up in Minnesota, like I was, my parents are as middle class as they could get. They never gave me a dollar. And I worked these jobs and I never had a tax bill really. All of a sudden, I finally get my career to launch and I start to make pretty decent money as an athlete. And my tax bill is like 45% of what I'm making. And I'm just like, this can't be how it really is. This cannot be the way it's got to be. So I started finding books on money and taxes. And I read a book called Tax-Free Wealth. And I went to Arizona and I interviewed a CPA firm. And they said, yeah, you should start buying multifamily. You can do this and that and work with your wife. And she was a busser at a restaurant and a server at a restaurant. Can she qualify as a real estate professional? And if you start to behave differently, you can qualify for these different tax havens. So started that path and I bought a duplex. I bought a nineplex, I bought 24 units and started to see cash flow and passive income and loan pay down and depreciation and all that good stuff that came from multifamily. I got hooked on creating multiple streams of passive income while trying to save on my tax bill. So that was really it. Reading a bunch of books, hired a CPA firm and started taking action.
So that's Tom Wheelwright's book, correct?
That is Tom Wheelwright's book.
So I have that book. I haven't opened it. Tell me a little bit about what kind of stuff is in there.
Exactly what he writes about in the book, I'm not recalling, but I remember it was enough to realize that tax in real estate can be depreciated. You can depreciate the asset. And when you buy a multifamily deal and you do a cost segregation study, you hire a company to come in and basically break out the property's fixed assets and things that are added in, like refrigerators and light fixtures and appliances, and all that different stuff can be broken out and created into a report that shows a loss on your K-1. And you take the K-1 loss, which is sped up depreciation, and it offsets your actual income and shows you a phantom loss. It wasn't really a loss, but it's a loss on paper. Mm-hmm. And it brings how much your tax bill would be based off your income down to a lower level. And it's just it's there. It's a bonus. It's incentivizing folks to spend their time and money to make the real estate nicer around the country. It's an incentive. The tax law is an incentive. And if you know the incentives, now you can play by the rules. If you don't know the rules, you're not going to win the game. It's just like Monopoly. You got to know the rules. And sometimes I'm a snowboarder. I don't know the rules of all the tax law language. And I hire a great CPA to help me understand those laws and those rules and how to play the game at a higher level.
Rock and roll. The two, I think you said a 2, a 9, and then I forget how big you scaled. Were those all with Mike from the beginning?
No, before Mike and I partnered, it was just my own money and me alone. So I bought a duplex and then nineplex and then the 24 unit deal. And then he was buying single family homes and we've been close for a long time. And I suggested we bought a deal together and we ended up buying an apartment together. And then that was the beginning. And that was in 2015. We bought a 28 unit deal together.
Okay. So how about we backtrack from the get-go? I think the duplex is pretty self-explanatory. You had some cash, you put it as a down payment, you purchased it. And then how did you scale from there to the nine?
Nineplex was only in 2012 when I bought it. It was only like $250,000. So I bought it on my own. I think I put $65,000 down, hired a property management company to manage both of them for me while I was snowboarding. I can't be there on the day-to-day basis. I'm not collecting rent, fixing the toilets. It's just, I didn't have time for it. So I hired a third-party management company and they didn't have folks on site on a size like that. It's a third-party management company that manages a bunch of small assets and they're housed at one office corporation.
Okay, cool. And then so on this next bigger property, that was the syndication?
Actually, that was still a partnership. It was myself and Mike and one friend who put in some money, just had some extra cash that we're trying to find a place for and invested it into a deal, the three of us. First syndication wasn't actually until 2017 where we actually fully raised money from outside investors.
And so you went to Brad's. I know that you guys went to Brad Sumrock.
We did, yeah.
Okay, cool. So I was at his event, I think in March. I know that you were in the building. I was looking for you. I didn't know exactly what you looked like, but I knew that you were there. I've been wanting to meet you because you're a snowboarder and I've been snowboarding since 1986. I thought that in the early 90s, I think you could go pro without like having any major skills because it hadn't really come onto the scene yet.
Yeah,
everybody like hated snowboarders on the ski mountain and stuff like that. Yeah. All right, so I want to kind of dig into this process. You go to Brad Sumrock, he teaches you, you know, some concepts of scaling probably. Take me through the evolution. You go through the program, you do some syndications, and then how did you scale from there?
Yeah. The biggest is just knowledge and understanding how to value a multifamily deal. How do you actually figure out what it's worth? Once you know how to do that and you have the relationships with the brokers, it's really just about bringing the deal to the equity. Because people have cash, they have it sitting in their bank account, and maybe it's not producing a yield. It's not returning enough capital to keep up with inflation. The deals we're buying are somewhere between 15 to 20% IRR, annual return. Over a five-year period, you project a return of somewhere between 85 to 100% over a five-year period. And we started small, went from 28 units, which is a partnership, to our first syndication at 45. We went to 86, then we went to 101. And you get to figure out how to underwrite a deal. Once you know how to underwrite a deal and you have the relationship with the brokers, you make an offer on the deal. And as long as your offer is a fair offer, now you're buying the deal. Now you're just showing your investors what the deal is and why you like the deal. And ideally, they agree with what you found and believe what you're saying and say, yeah, let's go together. And then they invest and you all own as a group.
You make it sound really simple. I don't know that there's a lot of people on my show that scale quick. I've seen it happen. I've seen young kids do it. I've seen old people do it. I've seen ladies, all kinds of ethnic backgrounds. Y'all get into syndication. I don't know that everybody scales at the level that you have, though. So I kind of want to dive a little bit deeper into the whole capital raising process, because I think you guys had a pretty solid understanding of finding deals and meeting brokers and underwriting. But then the equity, I think that's the whole purpose of this show, is to discover and explore, like, what do you say to people? How do you convince them? What kind of conviction? Like, because I don't know that everybody has such an easy time raising capital as you make it sound.
Yeah, we're not ever trying to convince anybody that they should invest in our deal, because I personally don't think you want to come across as a selling people and saying you really should do this deal and here's why, blah, blah. It's more of, here's the data we found, and the data should support what you're doing. So for a deal like we're buying now in Dallas, it's only 124 units, but it's in a submarket that we know very well. Our other properties are within 4 miles of this deal. We know what the comps are doing, the competitors. So, hey, what are the competitors' rents at right now? You can only do what you can do to a multifamily deal based on the submarket. And every submarket is different. So they might say real estate right now is in a really tough spot. Well, I'd have to ask you, where are you talking about? What asset class are you buying? Is it storage, office, retail? Is it multifamily? And then if it's multifamily, is it A class? Is it B class? Is it C class? And what we really like is workforce housing, B and C class apartments. And our base goal with everything we're buying is first and foremost is cash flow. So if we can figure out what the competitors are doing, and we can verify what their rents are, and we can verify what their finishes are like, interior and exterior. What are their kitchens like? What are their bathrooms like? What are their rents like? What's their amenities like? What's their office staff like? And you figure that information out. Now you can see what you're able to do with the property you're buying. You're able to figure out, hey, if we do X, Y, and Z, we're going to be better than the comps. And if we're better than the comps, we should be able to get close to what they're getting for rent. So if you can figure that information out, which is anyone can do, and then you go to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, get the debt figured out. Their debt's very simple, 65% loan to value. The interest rate is what it is. You get a few years of IO, non-recourse debt. You take that. And then you figure out what your expenses are going to be, because you got income minus expenses. And once you figure out what your expenses are going to be, based off of your other portfolio, your management company, now you've got your net operating income. And you've got, once you got your net operating income, which is the most important number you're going to have in multifamily, now you're in a place of cash flow or you're not. You take your debt away from that. Do you have cash flow or not? And if you've got cash flow based off of what you're doing, based on the market, what's your cash flow like? And if there's enough cash flow there, most people are like, yeah, I'd love to have extra passive income. I want multiple streams of income. That's all we're doing, is we're just showing people, this is the deal we're buying. Here's how the comps compete compared to us. Here's how we're going to compete based off our CapEx. Here's the debt. Here's our expenses. Here's our net operating income. Here's our projected returns. So that's really the way of doing it. And always our money is there in the deal. I think a lot too is portrayed on how you feel and how you come across with what you're doing. Do you come across with certainty of what you're doing? What's your track record been like? If you're trying to raise money, the best way you can do it is get your investors in that first deal and then overperform. If you get to the, which we've had a lot of deals far overperform. So once you have deals that are far overperforming, it's easier now to go back to those investors, and they're going to probably go talk to a few of their friends and say, hey, I got this guy named Dan. He's been buying apartments for the last decade. Here's what they did on this last deal. It's done. Like, it's over. You should take a look at his stuff or their stuff. Mike, same thing. Mike, hey, Mike, I got this guy, Mike. He's been buying these deals. Here's what he did for me. So if you do a great job, people are going to talk. You do a bad job, people are going to talk. So that's the part of this business where you've got to know what you're doing, and you just do your dang best with educating yourself. And it doesn't mean we didn't make mistakes. It does not mean that. It does not mean you're not going to have challenges. That there are challenges that constantly are coming up. There's challenges right now. Everyone knows about interest rates went through the moon. It's more about how do you handle and address the problem at the time, and how do you pivot to make sure that you don't have those problems happen again. So maybe I'll stop there before I just keep rambling.
No, that's cool. I like, we do a lot of rambling on this show. So a lot of people have said, and I understand this to be true, that if you're having to sell at the end, it's because you didn't do a good job in the beginning educating and nurturing. So what are you doing to educate and nurture in terms of marketing? Because I think you're pretty confident in your story and your business model. You explained that very well. What are you doing? Is it like, are you just getting more and more referrals? And if so, like, are you asking for them? Or are you just letting people naturally, organically tell people about you? Like, what are you doing to educate? Because I noticed I went onto your LinkedIn today and like, you haven't posted anything in multiple months. So what are you doing to get the message out to new people?
Yeah, I don't use LinkedIn enough. I was talking to a gentleman the other day at a Tony Robbins event, Business Mastery, and he's like, are you on LinkedIn? And I'm like, I don't really know if I am. So the way we are getting our business out is we have a podcast called Keeping It Real Estate. It's 100% about multifamily real estate mindset. We produce one episode a week on that and push it as hard as we can on social media because I think we got really great content there. So if you're looking for a podcast, basics of multifamily, Keeping It Real Estate, we send out a weekly newsletter to our entire investor database about what we're seeing in the market. We're sending out monthly updates every single month. Every deal we own, every investor gets one update every month about the performance of the deal, what went well, what challenges we're having, what CapEx was done, a whole nine yards. We're very in tune with our investors. We're constantly going to a lot of real estate networking events, seminars. You know, you talked about Sumrock, Tony Robbins. We're not there pitching real estate, but we're at these events and you start to do what you're doing and people start to get to know you, or you start to have a reputation and people introduce you to friends. So those are the main things I'm thinking about for getting out there. We have some events where we speak out on stage. I was invited down to Quest IRA. Quest is a company that helps people turn from an IRA to a self-directed IRA. I was invited to be on stage there for a panel speaking about the market. Those are the main things. And then social media as well, if I didn't mention that, Facebook and Instagram and podcasts, a lot of podcasts.
So you mentioned that it hasn't been a perfect road and there's been some challenges. Why don't we go into, I'd be curious, man, because I talked to you, Mike, about the whole process of scaling and how challenging that is. Because I think a lot of syndicators, they can imagine themselves owning real estate, but they can't imagine, or at least they haven't really contemplated, like, I'm going to be a boss of people and leader of people. And I'm going to have to, they're going to be looking up to me. And there's a lot of challenges there. But instead of going in that direction, I'm curious about these challenges. Like, do you have any war stories that you could tell us about? Anything crazy happen on any of your apartments?
Yeah, we have a couple. First one was up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. We bought a property that was rented out to a demographic that was very challenging. Let's just say that in a tough part of town. And we were releasing our four bedroom units at $1,200 a month. And the thing cash flowed incredibly well. But when we bought it, nobody else was doing it. But it quickly got around to everyone in town, all apartment owners and single family owners that this demographic was willing to rent four bedroom or homes out for $1,200 to $1,300. And everybody and their mother started to fill that demand. And pretty soon it was difficult for us to not only fill our units, but keep people in there that were actually of quality. It was a good lesson that you don't want to be tied to necessarily, you know, one demographic. And this is a small one. This is a very small one. It wasn't like the Hispanic population where there's a lot of folks. It was a very small niche area in a very small part of town that just had this one type of demographic. That was a very eye-opening thing. We luckily sold it and basically broke even. It was just three of us in that deal. Another very challenging deal was we bought a deal in Carlsbad, New Mexico. And if anyone's familiar with that location, it's 100% oil dependent. It does not have a diverse economic driving field of many, many major employers. It has one, it's oil. And we bought the deal and COVID hits. And 3 months later after closing, all of a sudden oil crashes to what it did, negative. It went zero. It was depleted. And all of these oil companies scattered and all of the employees left. And once you have that, you go back to supply and demand. How many pieces of units are there to live and how many people are trying to rent them? Controls everything. Supply and demand controls everything. So as soon as the jobs went away, people went away, all of a sudden the units, there's tons of vacant units. Everyone's dropping their prices. We went from 100% occupied with $200 to $350 rent increases down to about 55 to 60% occupancy with about 40 to 50% price reduction in rent. Never did a capital call on the deal. And now, luckily, the market is coming back with a vengeance. And I actually just got off that weekly call with that management firm. We sold the deal. We bought it in March of 2020, I think it was, or it's right around there. I think that's right when COVID hit. Mm-hmm. I actually closed in January of 2020. And by March, COVID hit, I think is when it was. But now the oil market is doing well again. And when these markets are volatile like this one, you have major swings down and major swings up. And now that market's coming back and it's swinging up really, really hard. We just had a record-breaking month of income, which is so great to finally see from the life of the hold of the deal from even way back when rents were high. Now we've just broke what our previous all-time highs were. So it was a very scary time. It was very uncomfortable. It's not for everybody, but the lessons on those deals is coming with low leverage fixed debt. Luckily, we had it. Coming with a lot of extra cash. Luckily, we had it. If you're going to buy deals and you're going to finance your CapEx, be cautious because these lenders are very, very strict on what they want you to spend that money on. And sometimes markets change like you have with COVID. Luckily, our CapEx was not financed. It was unfinanced rehab. So it gives you more flexibility to be able to make different decisions and not have to spend the money on those different value add plays. So those are just two that come to the top of my mind, and I'm sure there's others.
Any lessons that you would give yourself, an earlier version of yourself, besides what you're talking about here?
Yeah, biggest lessons, and this is just me. This isn't saying this is gospel to everybody in multifamily or in real estate investing, but for me, it's just low leverage fixed debt. If you can buy a deal with low leverage fixed debt, you can weather pretty much any storm. As long as you've got runway and cash flow, just resolve to cash flow. Get to a place where you've got passive income every month, no matter what. And if you've got that, you're going to likely do well over the long period of time because the dollar is not going up in value. The only thing Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett both say they're certain of, and they don't usually never use those words, certainty and guarantee, is that the dollar is going to go down in value. So if the dollar is going to go down in value, you've got to be an inflationary asset that can enjoy that. And while the dollar goes down, these values go up. As the dollar gets destroyed, like they printed trillions in COVID and will continue to, fixed hard real assets will go up in value. So as long as you can control your expenses and your debt, let inflation will take care of the income on its own.
What about market selection? So where do you guys like to purchase right now? And would you go back and invest in all these different places if you had to do it all over again?
No, great question. I would not. I would pick one or two markets and I would become an expert in those two markets. We're in Dallas and we're in Nashville. Those are our two markets. We're not looking anywhere else. We have one deal left in Minnesota. We have one in Alabama. We have one in New Mexico. Once we exit those, we're already focusing all our efforts on even smaller pockets in these markets, these submarkets. Say, what submarket are we going to be in Dallas? Where are we going to be in Nashville? And how can we get to know this submarket so intimately that we can look at a deal and say, yep, at that price, we'll buy it right now. That's really the goal. And do you have the team that can take over whatever you're buying and turn the property to become, when you buy a property, it's not where you want it to be probably. And you're trying to bring it to where you want it to be. What's this pace and what's your certainty of execution is the other piece with your team members. So that'd be my answer to that question.
So how long do you want to hold these properties? Are there any of them that you want to keep forever?
I wouldn't say forever. It'll depend on the markets. It just depends. I'm more about passive income and cash flow and having a lot of assets that just pay a little bit of money every month. And just like clockwork, just passive income from many different multiple streams through many different submarkets. So it varies greatly based on what we're seeing. We're always watching the market and analyzing what's changing, what's coming. The thing you don't want to be in is in a forced to sell. You don't want to be forced to sell. That's why you come back to low leverage fixed debt. Where if you've got deals right now that have low leverage fixed debt and they're cash flowing, you're not selling right now. This is in late 2023, you're not selling if you don't have to. If you have to sell, you're probably going to be selling at a loss. Or you're going to be selling it if you bought the property in the last couple of years, you're going to be selling in some pain. So that's, again, coming back to cash flow, resolve the cash flow, make sure you get cash flow, underwrite that deal, stress test that dang thing, where if things don't go well, you've got extra money. And if you have that time, then you're in a position where when the market comes back, and it seems to me based off of cycles, you look at real estate cycles that have been going on for hundreds of years, there will come a time again where prices go a little bit berserk. And that point is when you might want to exit a deal that you've had for a long period of time, because maybe it needs more CapEx. Maybe you're coming to another point where you either got to refi the deal and put a bunch of money in, or you can liquidate and take a bunch of cash out for the investors and go start something fresh.
Have you thought about how much is enough? Like, how big do you want to scale?
Yeah, for me, it's not really about how much is enough. It's more about how far can we go. And I think as long as we've got the energy and the ability and the sophistication and the investors that want to go there, and we're capable of doing it, let's go. Ideally, I'd love to see 10,000 doors is kind of a number that I came up with when I was younger, but I'm not attached to that number. It's more of a, can we buy this deal and add massive value for our investors as a group? Let's do it. And if not, we'll keep looking for something else where we can.
Cool, Dan. All right, man, let's jump into the lightning round. My first question to you is, what is the best vacation you've ever taken?
I would say the best vacation I've ever taken would probably either be, it was just a trip with my wife and I to Maui for 5 days, just together, being together and not having the kids there, or going to Ireland with the whole family. We were just in Ireland a couple years ago, and it was absolutely amazing. It was so much fun. I look back and think about the places we were and the pictures we took and the things we did, and it was worth every penny.
Favorite book of any kind?
I'm all about mental growth. So I'd say it's probably been talked a lot, but you know, why am I drawing a blank on it right now? The most popular book ever with Napoleon Hill.
Think and Grow Rich, or one of the
others? Yeah, thank you. Think and Grow Rich.
I think a lot of people are familiar with that book. What they may not know is that he's got like 20 other books. I read one that was recommended to me by Zach Appenstall called How to Own Your Own Mind. Absolutely phenomenal book. For the audience that's listening, recommend that highly. All right, next question. How much of your success do you attribute to mindset?
I would say 100% of my success comes down to mindset. You wouldn't take your first step without your belief and confidence, and that's step one.
How long do you want to live?
I'd like to see at least 100 plus. I don't know. I'll get to 100 and see what the world's doing at that time.
All right, short answer on this. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Do what you say you're going to do to add value for investors.
Buyer, can you tell me about a moment that changed the trajectory of your life?
I would say just realizing what I wanted when I was younger as a snowboarder, and making a decision that no matter what happened, I was going to make it. And same thing with real estate, knowing what I wanted and making a decision, we're going to build a company that's going to be around for decades.
What would you need in order to 10X your business?
I think an upgraded mindset comes back to it. I was just at Business Mastery with Tony Robbins last week, and I thought it was equity and you can't source enough capital. But I think it really comes down to mindset of what actions are you taking on a day-to-day basis to change that.
What is a capital raising mistake you see people doing?
This may be incorrect, but I think the capital raising mistake people are making is doing deals before they're ready to do deals, or not really having enough experience to be doing the deals, but getting them done anyways.
All right, a few more questions. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I don't know.
Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Miracle? I feel like I have a lot of miracles. Kids being born, just successes and things that have happened in my life. But near-death experience, one time I almost was drowned. I was in a riptide in California, and I had a moment where everything slowed down and I was gonna drown, and I had to throw my hands up in the air and yell for help, and the lifeguard jumped down, came and saved me. I was in a riptide and I was getting hammered by these swells. And there was a moment where when I was out there, I'm like, I'm gonna sink, I'm gonna die, and things slowed down. Luckily I survived.
Wow. All right, last question, brought to you by Shanna Amigo. She, one of our great listeners, she would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I would say finding a way and helping more folks find financial freedom. The answer isn't as complicated as a lot of people think it is. If you've got time and you know what you're doing, you can help a lot of people become financially free.
Rock and roll, cool answers on the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star review. Shout out to our sponsors, the Family Office Club and Invest Next. Dan, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
Yeah, reach out to me at dan@granitetowersequitygroup.com. Just send me an email, dan@granitetowersequitygroup.com.
Dan, are you still snowboarding?
I do a little bit if my kids want to go, but not much.
Fascinating. Okay, cool. Any last parting words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale on their journey?
Get clear on what you want and go like hell.
Woo. All right. Cool, man. This has been a blast, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.